This is the Sounding Board Podcast with Hutchie and Damo. Thanks to Drinkwise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to Drinkwise.
Nice to have your company on the Sounding Board for Drinkwise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to Drinkwise. This is Series 6. It's Episode 43, which I think means one to go in 2021. Craig Hutchison, Damien Barrett with you. And Hutchie, I want to start today by giving some of my sympathy and support for a man who's been under siege in the past few days. Not probably not the one you're thinking of as I talk right now. Sunrise Weekend host, Matt Doran. I, like Matt Doran, could think of 423,626 things I'd rather do than listen to an Adele album. And he's copping it. He's copping it, Hutchie, yeah, for not listening to it.
But the point of difference, Damo, and hello to you and to all of our Sounding Board fraternity, is that it was his job to listen.
Yes, it's a big difference. And I probably would have listened to it had I been about to interview Adele, but seriously,
he's flown to London, part of the Channel 7 $1 million check, reported $1 million check.
Which is interesting in itself, and we'll get to that part of this this story in a moment. Yeah, and sat down with Adele, which was going to be a massive Channel 7 promotional interview. I think it was going to air on the weekend just gone, or around this time, and got to the latter stage of the interview by all reports, Hutchie. Adele realised he hadn't listened to the album, which she's promoting and releasing. Asked him, had he, and he said no.
So they used the power of veto, which is in those deals, but very rarely exercised, I'd assume. It's one of those clauses that people agree to thinking that'll never mean anything.
But this is where it's interesting, because Channel 7, by the all reports, Hutchie, has paid for the access to a person promoting something, which I think
it was packaged into the TV special. So it was the steak knives.
Okay.
But a pretty important part of the steak knives.
There's money attached. I wouldn't claim to know anywhere near what the amount is, but it seems, with all the reports, that there was money attached to Channel 7 getting access. But then on top of that, the promotional arm of Adele's record label then had the right to actually pull the interview if it wasn't happy with the end product, which I find staggering. If you're going to pay for it and then still be beholden to someone else's views on it of a favourable nature.
Yeah, that veto clause, I assume, sits in most of those deals and is very rarely exercised, and people sign up to it because they think, oh, this will never happen. A few questions for me. So did they send a producer with Matt? I'm only just reading the bits and pieces on my Twitter feed.
And good question.
And if not, why not? And if so, what was their role in making sure the host, like the talent, was briefed? I know you got to take responsibility.
I think
you got
to take responsibility. Oh, I think you have to. If you're going to interview someone, I think you need to know everything, including the latest part about them.
And the missed the email defense. How do you think that flew? Like, that was...
Oh, it was plausible. No, I bought it.
Plausible?
Yes, it was plausible.
You're actually buying the crazy that...
I don't mind his defense.
The email got
that
sent exactly at the time he was in the air and he missed it.
And, oh, hang on. How long do you often take to reply to an email, Hutchie? I've had that many people ask me over the journey, can you just tell Hutchie I've got an email, I sent it on 4:44 on Thursday last week and he hasn't responded? You don't get to a lot of your emails. I can imagine that's understandable.
If you had a singular focus, right, though, if you were flying to London to interview Adele, who is back after 6 years with a new album, that is the reason you are interviewing, the reason you've been given access. It's not because Adele's got a book out, or Adele's switching careers. The interview was based upon the new album.
Yeah, and as often is the case with Adele, there's meanings in the songs that she sings that I choose not to listen to. You wouldn't be an Adele listener either, would you, Hutchie?
I watched the special on Sunday night on... I think everyone had a special, didn't they? So I watched the one on Nine, I reckon it was.
Is that the Oprah one, which was the...
No, the one at... this
was an old one, wasn't it?
No, I watched the one in Los Angeles outside on the... up on the mountain. Beautiful backdrop of Los Angeles, Damo. You would have loved it.
Okay. What, the Griffith's University, was it? Yeah, up there. Okay. Yeah, or the bowl, was it? Or...
And there was an interview with Oprah packaged inside of that. So it had been pretty well orchestrated TV campaign. In fairness to Matt, he put his hand up and he went with the email defence. Now, I get your point that it's half sellable. I'm not...
It's very plausible, that defence.
But he's got to have a laugh at himself now. The only way out of this... is to double down on mocking yourself for a good year and people will move on. In fact, it'll become endearing. By January, it'll be endearing if he plays it well.
Could he actually say that he had no interest in listening to the sort of music that she sings?
No.
Like I don't. I have no interest.
He's going to play up to it. I'd be doing things like I don't know, when you ring the boss next, you've got to say, hello, it's me. You know, you just got to lean in on the humour side of your muck up, because if you try and make it go away, I didn't make a blue here. No one's going to give you another chance. But humour's his best way out, I think.
How many times would you, Hutchie, have
What do you
been,
think about that?
Oh, well, yeah, but he doesn't have the luxury, really, does he? Because he's a straight person when it comes to the presentation of that Sunrise program on the weekend. I don't watch the weekend TV shows, but he can't be too flippant about it.
He's got no choice from here, because you're not getting a junket for the next 5 years. the junket in itself, you are complicit in the promotion. Like, your journalistic credibility really gets left at Tullamarine Airport on the junkets. We've talked about it before. From the time he gets on board QF and he turns left rather than right because it's been funded by the network.
That's all part of it.
He's really working for Adele from that point on. And he's not working for Channel 7 until he lands again. So, you know, if you squander your junket opportunity, it's a long road back, I think. Because they're queued up to do the junkets, aren't they? Like, everyone wants the junket.
Well, the footy show, in the glory days of the footy show, Hutchie, before it got a bit messy at the end, the way out for it would have been to totally lampoon itself over it.
Do a parody song.
Do a parody song.
Yep.
Yeah. Hello from the other
side. That crossed my mind too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could he do that?
He could, absolutely.
Dress up?
He should probably do it. He probably should start with a soft landing, like maybe the Channel 7 Christmas tape. You know, the networks have the Christmas tapes with all the mistakes.
Just do that.
They're getting a bit harder to do in the modern era, but I think that would be his go. If he sang hello from the other side at the Channel 7 Christmas tape.
Live?
Or got up at the Christmas party, then you'd even crack a smile from Kerry. He'd probably roll in for half an hour for a scotch. And then he'd go, what about that bloke turning up doing the hello from the other side of the Christmas party? And then he's away.
He's away then.
He humours his only
and
way
then
out.
Then you deliberately leak that from the Channel 7 Christmas party to other outlets who would embrace it as well. And then
spotted.
That would go, quote, viral.
Spotted. You know the gossip column? Spotted. Matt Moran parodying himself at the Channel 7. Oh, he's not a bad bloke. He can have a laugh at himself. That's the way out for you, Matt. Anyway, that's my two bobs worth.
How many times would you have entered an arrangement along those lines, Hutchie, over your
We've talked about it quite
career?
A bit.
Yeah, but these are different. They're yep. straight promos.
I can tell you a couple of times I've been thoroughly underprepared, like Matt.
Yep.
And, you know, with differing consequences. I think I touched on it once before here, but I was asked by a great business to appear at their conference in what I thought was a Q&A.
Yeah, roll up, take your money, and just answer a few questions from the MC.
No, there was no cash involved.
Oh, of course there was.
It was a wonderful business who had asked me to do
appear.
Yeah, and I said, no problem, I'd be happy to help you out.
This is before you were big too, wasn't it?
No.
This is before you made a real national
don't,
name.
Don't
this,
be silly.
I think this is story's about 15 years ago.
No, it's about...
It was in Adelaide from memory?
It's only about 5 years ago.
It was longer than that. You told me about 15 years ago.
It wasn't in Adelaide. But I turned up thinking I was doing a question and answer at 11 a.m. I thought it was going to be a room of like 30 people as I sit down at a table, maybe a few coffee scrolls, coffee.
So no prep.
So I thought, you know, most of this can be winged.
Yeah, you haven't listened to the Adele album in preparation for the Adele interview.
And I walked in, opened the door, and it was an auditorium of, call it 500 people in suits, all seated attentively. And I looked up at the stage, and it had guest speakers today.
Keynote.
Ida Buttrose and yours truly.
In that order?
And I walked in.
So you're following Ida?
I'm following Ida. And I've walked in just at the intro where they said, joining us now on stage is one of Australia's most influential media figures and businesswomen, an OBE, the original founder of Clio, first ever youngest editor of the Weekly.
Probably the biggest journalistic
Jimmy
name
Barnes.
When I was growing up, Hutchie, in the 70s and 80s. And still massive now, running the ABC.
She's one of the most reputed speakers in the Southern Hemisphere. She even appeared in a song Cold Chisel and Jimmy Barnes wrote about her influence on Australian society. Put your hands together for the greats. Ida Buttrose, OBE. And Ida gets up and does 45 minutes.
And her first line was, when I started preparing for this speech 3 weeks ago. Yeah,
no, she rolls out the best prepared, most eloquent.
Well, she's a beautiful speaker.
Even the pauses were magnificent. Like, it was just palm of your hand.
So what are
stuff.
You doing? You're starting to get nervous.
I'm in row three.
Clammy hands, heating up, sweating.
I'm in row three, trying to make notes on the back of a napkin. I've got to pull
together. You do everywhere you go.
I've got to pull together a keynote in 45. It was sweat was coming out of my brow.
Did you get away with it?
I don't think so, no. But
I've seen you host functions where you've had a minute's notice. There was a
standing ovation for Ida at the end. That was Ida. And then even the intro next. Well, joining us next is this guy who's done a bit of What's he done? Used to be a footy reporter or something. Anyway.
You dragged me. One of those early trips in your catch.
Humour was the only way through, Dame. You've got to make fun of yourself going after Ida.
You dragged me along, Hutchie.
The worst part of that, I thought this couldn't get any worse. I'm just about to start this flimsy attempt at following Ida.
Yeah.
And unlike most speakers who collect, check and gone. Yeah. I just sits down in row two
and sits up and look at you
to pay respect to the rest of the speakers. She thinks he's got a lot of trouble here. I'm going to hang around and pay him the courtesy of listening to his. And I see her face in row two, having just smashed it, and I think, oh no.
I would love for that speech to be on tape. We get a whole episode out of that speech.
Like the Mike Moore episode of The Late Show. Remember when he went on the comedy debate and someone had written all his jokes before him? And he just had to keep scratching out the jokes that were left to tell. That was me.
And you are good on your feet, though, Hutchie. You, one of those early trips we had to New York, one of your friends over there had asked you to basically roll up at short notice to... It was a selling event. Was it makeup or aftershave or perfume?
Tiffany.
Yeah, and you said come along for the ride. So we left where we were and we went there. And then within 5 minutes of getting there, the place was bigger than you thought it was. It was in a private residence, I think, but a lot of people.
It was in Tiffany.
In Tiffany, yeah, and
oh then, no, you're right. It was a private residence.
I think it was the Tiffany of the company. But I saw you. You were asked then at very short notice. Could you actually just basically MC this intro the room and hear the five people you need to know about? You had about 90 seconds prep time on that, and you pulled it off. No, I've seen you do it, Hutchie.
Not so sure about
I've
that.
I've seen it was, you do it. It
was, the other time, just quickly getting a bit self-indulging. The other time that I was thoroughly unprepared was as a young producer at RSN. 1994, 5, call it 20, 21 years old.
So you're doing the Kevin Butler
producing
show?
KB in the Dock, and used to try and hustle for guests like most young producers do.
And used to sleep under the desk, under the production desk, having not been home.
And it was the then equivalent of the AT&T Pebble Beach
Pro-Am.
Celebrity Pro-Am.
Okay.
And so all the celebrities were there playing. You know, I remember Kevin Costner, Bryant Gumbel, just a whole bunch of kind of random celebrities. And I was ringing the hotel rooms demo, trying to get one on the show. And I'd ring celebrity room and it wouldn't ring out. In those days you could ring the hotel and they'd put you through to the room if you knew the name of the... So finally I rang a couple and they hung up on me and I finally got through to Bill Murray. Bill Murray's hotel room, you know, the Groundhog Day, Caddyshack star, and he answered. And I said, look, it's so-and-so from Melbourne. Could I get an interview with Kevin and the Doc tomorrow morning? And he said, I'll do it now. That's it. You've got 2 minutes, 5 minutes. I'll do it now, like right now.
Yep.
And so he goes, it's now or never. So I had to make the decision to go demo.
Yeah.
In those days, you had to splice the reels. Remember the reels?
Yeah.
I didn't know how to do it very well.
Actually put them onto a device, yeah.
Yep. And so I started interviewing.
And logistics aren't your strong suit in any facet of life. So to do that would have been an ordeal.
I didn't know the name of the golf tournament, how he'd performed, what his last movie was, what his next movie was. I couldn't remember the name of
Caddyshack
off the top of my head.
That movie with Chevy Chase.
And he absolutely smacked me, right? He just smacked me for 5 minutes about how unprepared I was. Everything I asked, he corrected or told me I was wrong. And in the end, he said, this is a joke, and hung up. And to his credit, KB said to me, no, we've got to run that. It's funny.
Oh.
So I ran it at like 5:45 or 5:50 the next morning thinking no one would hear it. And I thought I'd got away with it because in those days it didn't go up on Twitter or podcast.
No.
You had to hear
you
it
actually
in real time.
Could get away with it in those days.
You had to hear it in real time. But I remember about 2 weeks later I thought I'd got away with that horrendous interview and I was at somewhere in footy and Greg Miller said to me.
Greg Miller.
I ran into Greg Miller. Remember Greg? And he said.
Oh, yeah, Greg.
He said, it's in the car the other day. That is the single worst interview I've ever heard with Bill Murray. What were you thinking? I'm like, look, it's a long story. Anyway.
Remember you could actually ring celebrities like that, Hutchie, when they flew into town. Like with the Tennis Open, you could actually just, you found out where they were staying. I got Andre Agassi on the phone just through the old cold call landline one. Marit Safin, that one called.
They'd give you quotes for the paper, wouldn't they?
Well, you just said who you were from, and they'd give you. Sometimes you'd get 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah. Although the Marit Safin one blew up because.
Remind me of that story, because I remember you wrote that.
Well, it wasn't. I didn't think I was doing the wrong thing, but I sort of would breeze in to do the tennis, unlike the tennis beat writers, and didn't know.
Is there a gap in the Sheffield Shield calendar around that time?
No, there was. It went into recess over then, Hutchie, but you're always ready for the January. It was a great event to cover,
the tennis?
Tennis Open. Yeah, that was a great event to cover.
It's a bit...
That was for, from a 20-year-old or whatever it was from those eras, 21, 20, well, younger, 20 at one stage, I reckon, doing the tennis. It was great.
You know what the tennis is? The tennis is a rolling roadshow of journalists who are all kind of in the whack up on the thing.
Yep.
Used to be.
Yep.
And if you came in as a fly-by-nighter trying to pull a news zone out of it, you were seen as the enemy.
Yeah, you were.
You were like, this is not how we do things on the tour. You know, like if you came in and trying to find an angle and land a yarn and then leave the debris for the beat writers.
Yep.
Gee, they get dirty on you, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, there was. And even on this occasion, so the Kooyong Classic, as it was called at one stage, and I think it was called that this particular year, they'd play as a lead-up event before the Aussie Open, which all the big names would go to it in effectively an exhibition round-robin match. And I remember putting the official request in.
Their guards down a bit there, didn't they?
Yeah. I put the official request in for Marit Safin, who was massive, as you know, at the time, and then was not getting anywhere with the official organiser. Said, I'll just try him the old-fashioned way on the phone in his hotel, and got him. And he gave me a few quotes anyway. But he then told the organisers of the Kooyong Classic and did all hell break loose.
Going to pull your accreditation and all that stuff?
Oh, I don't think they got that serious. But I didn't think I'd done anything wrong, and I still don't. But it just made you aware that there was a whole little industry within itself that looked after us. And I don't have an issue with that because I've been part of other industries which do have similar practice.
So on that, you've been a beat writer, as we know, for the Sheffield Shield and... you know, you're a major reason for its astounding success that's gone on to become after the coverage you gave it for all those years.
Used to go to Perth for about 7 days for a Shield game. You'd have to get in there a day early, of course, and then you couldn't leave on that night because you were writing copies. Just think about the resource attached to covering a Shield game.
As a beat writer, as you were, did you used to get protective of your patch?
No, I was too young to worry about it.
If people crashed in and had tried to do a yarn on you?
That was how I
first became
so
hated at the Herald Sun.
Because you didn't get on with Mick Horan, who was a mate of mine and who had the beat there for a little while. And
I got along with Mick. He just didn't
get on with
really
you.
Get along with me. I like Mick.
He didn't like you.
Towards the end, I don't think he did, no.
No, he didn't. I don't think it, even at the start. That's the thing about it.
Yeah, okay. Well,
because you tried to knock his door down at the beat. Is that what happened or not?
No, I just didn't know the protocols really or
cared for them.
Or probably care for them, I guess.
Yeah.
So I didn't know there was an old, you know, if you were the Sheffield Shield writer, no one else could write about the Shield. I thought a story is a story, right? You had a story, you'd go for it.
Certainly the way it is now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
And then if someone went away for 2 weeks, I just always saw that as an opportunity to write about their patch because they were away. So they'd come back and he'd written 5 stories and left a bit of debris in their backyard. And looking back, I can understand why they had some issues with it. But at the time, I just thought, oh, well, there's no one writing soccer. Like, Peter DeZero went away for a month. Okay, I'll write some soccer.
Peter DeZero.
On 519.
On 519.
That was his extension.
Yeah, 9292, 1519.
Beautiful man, Peter. Great journalist.
We used to answer the phone that way, 9292, 1519. That's what when the phone rang, you'd answer it with the number that you're answering on.
No, he wouldn't. No,
you did.
People used to ring for him all the time because he was so loved among the football fraternity, and they would always forget on the subs just forget his number, so they'd have to yell out, "Pete, goal," and he would yell back,
1519.
That's how I remember his extent. Hearing him yell it across the room every 10 times a day. Was how I remember his extent. He went away for a month and wrote about soccer. And
you didn't write soccer, did you?
I did write soccer for a month. Yeah.
You didn't remember that guy's name when you were doing him on Life TV and you interviewed him into the Channel 10 Sports Bulletin and introduced him as someone who he wasn't. Who was that?
It was Robbie Innes, and I thought it was Robbie Slater. Thanks for bringing that up. No, Pete went away for a month and he came back and I'd set up a Super League war in soccer. He was understandably ropeable. I had a breakaway league. He spent all this time cultivating these magnificent relationships, done a great job, and you came back and I had the sport at war with each other every day in the paper.
I'm speaking of soccer.
Encouraged by the subs too.
There's an article that I read last It's an article I read last night, Archie. You might as well start there now.
So, Peter, I'm really sorry. I never really apologise for that.
A-League sour grapes for News Corp. This is an article written by Kieran Francis. Fox Sports completely ignores A-League first round after losing broadcast rights. Fox Sports and News Corp has chosen to completely ignore the A-League men's competition on some of their platforms. In the first season, they don't have broadcast rights for the league. Now, I can't verify that story. Archie's been written. I take it at absolute face value. But would that happen? Would an organisation lose broadcast rights and then just totally snub it?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, would. I'm not saying it has in this instance.
I couldn't vouch for that because I don't follow it myself. So I'm not reading it, not seeking it.
But I was actually only thinking
about it. Wouldn't surprise me if they did, that organisation anyway.
I haven't seen that, but I was just thinking about it on the weekend. I was reading the, I think it was the Saturday Herald Sun, and there was a tremendous two-page Foxtel guide to the weekend sport. And it had, I don't know if you saw it, it had every game that was on television.
It was all Foxtel.
Yep. It was Foxtel's ultimate guide to the weekend, and it'd have, like, you know, name English soccer match, six-paragraph preview, time it goes on, and where you watch on Fox. Right? It was a two-page spread, and it was, like, content. It wasn't an ad. And it was really well curated. I remember thinking, gee, I always want, like, I never work out what time anything's on the weekend. This was just bang on where you wanted to go and how you wanted to get your way through the weekend.
Yep.
And I was thinking, if I were the media owner and you owned that asset and the newsroom, the print asset, of course you'd tie the two together.
Yep.
And of course you would.
Are you ignoring everything else?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's perhaps not ignoring, but if you're going to have a choice of editorial between something that you are invested in significantly or weren't wanted by for whatever reason, whoever's fault it was, of course you're going to put your energies into what you're invested in. They're doing a NBL page in every News Limited paper, which is fantastic for our sport, the NBL, and that really is in part because they've invested in the sport. So you're going to support your investment with content. It's been going on forever and a day.
No, I don't think it has been going on forever and a day. You always cover it, Hutchie, because, I mean, the rights that as they look and appear now is a relatively recent advent into the sports marketplace. I'm not saying there hasn't been money attached to the rights forever, because there has, but the way they're now structured and the ownership of media, this is a different space now.
Well, I think it's got much more aggressive, but I do think, you know, you're seeing through the line investments from media owners who support their investments with content aligned to it. And if that has to come at the expense of something, bear in mind it's a real estate game, newspapers. So for every page you take it off someone else.
But it used to not be a real estate game. They used to be papers of record, and I'm
waiting for you to get to this.
And that was what actually dominated.
I was almost going to suggest we do a papers of record episode. The papers of record no longer exist.
No, it doesn't.
It is a thing of the 80s.
But it did exist in our lifetime. There were still proud editors and sub editors who would view it as such. And I think it was a great attitude to take, because once upon a time, what was in that morning's paper was the record of the event. Imagine using the content of a newspaper in 2021 as the record of the event.
The New York Times was probably the last ones to hang on to that. They even had, like, clarifications from the day before's paper, because it was so important that history would say
had to be corrected.
Newspapers moved 10, 15 years ago, however long, from...
It was probably even longer than that, but there was still the attitude that what was in it was... Like, there was even some really boring stuff you'd cover because it had to be in the paper.
We've built six series out of this, really. It's... We've been talking about this in series one, episode one. News now is consumption-led. It is not importance-led. And...
What is news?
Well, news is what people choose to read. News is consumer-led. It's verity scores. It's not a statement of record.
It's almost what angers people the most now, though, isn't it? Because people want to be angered before they even read it.
Yeah, people get angry about getting angry. People are permanently angry. That's the world we live in 2021. But there is no more statement of record. It's all consumer-led and or self, you know, what you're self-interested in. And in news's case, and I would be exactly the same, they're self-interested in Foxtel. Of course they are.
Yeah. But don't you have to cover a national competition?
Well, you can acknowledge it. I'm sure I haven't seen it.
No, I haven't seen it. Either.
I haven't seen it not in the papers. So, but I think Fox Sports would be and FoxSports.com would be at the pointy end of leaving it out of the things.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a bit different, Fox Sports, to say.
Who's got the rights now? I don't even know.
10 and Paramount.
And who's got the NBL?
Fox, News, KO, ESPN.
So you'll get some News Limited love for the NBL this year.
It's been tremendous already, I must say. In fact, I would say the NBL coverage is in the new media deal has been absolutely exceeded my expectations early, been wrapped with it. And I would think the 10 Paramount coverage of A-League has been A+. They have Oh, they've been chips in on it. I know you probably don't.
No, I haven't watched it. No.
Yeah, 22 weeks annual.
I can't imagine you watching it either, by the way. Well, in fact, you'd be relying on someone else to have told you that, because I can't imagine you sitting down to watch anything to do with it. So what are you basing that on?
The social.
Oh, the social, where media. You see it on the little yeah, I think 15-second on Twitter, do you?
I think the A-League have done some nice things. I think the 10 deal is going to be a winner. I think Paramount's, I haven't tried the product yet, but the promotion of it's been great.
So you haven't seen it, is what
you're
saying.
The Keep Up app has
You've
been
seen it on
stuff.
Twitter.
Well, they did ads through the Melbourne Cup Carnival and through, like, they've rolled the shows through all their project, the shows, like The Project, and, like, I reckon they've done a good job.
Yeah, okay.
For all of their critics, 10, they've always been good at that stuff, haven't they? Like, the Big Bash, they did a great job of building it through the business.
Well, they also were the first organisation, Hutchie, to introduce high-definition TV to Australia long before its time.
We need a skip button on the podcast when you start talking HD.
Remember Channel 1, was it? And then they took it off it, and then we only got high definition about 2 years ago.
By the way, just quickly, quick note of clarification, statement of record. To all those people who sent angry tweets about how shambolic the staff writer's piece was last week, fair point.
There's a lot of love for it too.
It was very divisive.
It was polarising.
There was 50, maybe 60% who thought it was abhorrent.
No, I'd go with, I think the 60% might have been in favour, but I tell you what, the 40% who weren't,
those that liked
worked up.
They were okay, they were pretty good with it.
And for those who don't know what we're talking about, we interviewed staff writers last week, and I thought it worked. I think you did deep down, but upon reflection, you got your doubts.
No, I was unsure at the time, but I thought I was really to make a deal of myself for the sake of entertainment. But I like this one from James Fitzgerald, who sent a follow-up email. He found a story... of Clarkson.
This is funny, actually.
He found this.
Because I hadn't, in the interview I did with staff writers, I said I'd never met staff writers before, and then James Fitzgerald.
He sent this screenshot, 30th of July, 5:30 p.m, Alistair Clarkson, the club has to get out of my shadow, Sam's driving the bus, Clarko, by Damien Barrett and staff writers.
See, this was a meeting I was not aware of, James.
What did the staff writers contribute to that?
I don't know. I'm I probably should find out retrospectively.
Were there any quotes in there you're uncomfortable with? It was a great pickup.
Was that you? Because you were staff writers. You exposed yourself as staff writers last week in this interview.
Yeah, no, I think there was a... I remember.
Did you do that?
No, I remember them ringing late that night and asking if they could sub-license the name, and I said, fair enough.
Fair enough.
But I'd forgotten about it at the time.
So we've got a joint byline, you and I.
Yep. I want to ask you about Tim Payne, because
we had to get there.
People will be wondering what our take is. So it was an extraordinary day on Friday.
Yep.
Your view?
My view is, I don't know where to take it, Hutchie, because I want to tackle it from a post-event scenario, in that some of the commentary around it being made by people at Cricket Australia, I find highly hypocritical. So you've got the act itself, timeline 2017, authorities made aware of the text message exchange between Tim Payne and the Cricket Tasmania employee in 2018.
Do you think they should have stood him down then?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. As best I can tell. Now, again, I haven't got every bit of fact, and I think you need every bit of detail to make those opinions. Hutchie, you're asking me on this program when we have opinions. From what I've read, and I've read every word, I've made sure I've read every word, yep, I would have, at that very point in time, I would have stood him down as captain. I don't have a strong view on should he have actually been banned from playing, but I would have taken the captaincy role of him, given this is the backdrop to him being the replacement for the disgrace of Australian cricket with Sam Papergate. He was the way of the future. And the moment that happened with the person in the role of leader that you've made him and basically created, you've pitchforked him in not to just the team, but into the highest office in the land in the sporting sense, on the back of his image and wanting it to be very starkly different to the previous image, and you're then dealing with this as an organisation, that was the moment I think you need to reassess and deal with the fallout to that then, not as it was happening 3 years later. Now, I want your opinion, because sometimes you ask me mine, I'll give you mine, and you dance around yours. What would you have done?
Well, there's some missing facts, right?
So no. What would you have done, Hutchie? What would you have done?
Well, can I answer the question? There's some missing facts. So as it reads now, there was a complaint laid, it was investigated, and he was cleared of
the player's code. Or yep. I mean, they can dance around on whatever they want to say, but he was exonerated from the code aspect of it and the behavioural aspect of it.
Yeah, and I guess the inference is that...
Which I don't have a problem with, if that's the way they investigate it.
The inference is that it was highly inappropriate, or but consensual until the point of the picture. I'm only just reading the inferences, not... I haven't read the actual complaint or the report, and then became unsolicited from the point of the picture, and that was the moment of offence. Is that how I read it?
Yeah, I think that's a fair snapshot of it. Obviously, it's deeper than that, but yeah, I think that's a fair snapshot.
So it's investigated, and it comes back clear. Well, as probably as the leader, you're saying, well, you know, you obviously you recommended that it's clear. You're saying, well, how is it clear? Have we heard from the subject? Have we heard her version of events?
I think they had, at least in terms of the formal complaint aspect.
There's too many missing pieces of that era for me in this.
So what are you saying? Are you saying you would have just game on, keep him in the role?
You would have overruled the decision and said we're going to move ahead here because we're setting a new tone of culture.
Yep.
Or you would have said that investigation doesn't wash for me because you haven't actually got half of the story here. Because as I read it, maybe I read it wrong, the subject was not interviewed at that time. Is that right?
There was a representation of views, obviously, in a written form, which was legal, the way I read it.
They rolled.
So there is that side of it in the investigation, yeah.
And they clearly said, look, even though this investigation has cleared you, we're not comfortable with that, and we're going to either overrule it and let you go, or we're going to roll the dice, but if this becomes public, then it's over. And that's the riskier path they took.
But on what grounds are you making that decision?
I'm not defending it. I'm just saying that's what they did.
Let me get back, because once again, you haven't given me your opinion. In 2018, when you're made aware of it as the authority, I've just given you my opinion as to what I would have done. What would you have done?
I don't know, because I don't...
Hutchie, you're allowed to have an opinion.
I don't understand. I'd have certainly challenged the... Well,
you know what they've done now. You know what they've done now, the moment that's been made public. So let's deal with that.
Well, they've
made that decision now because it was made public, which I think is weak.
Yeah. So, as I said to you, we would have done one of two things. You'd have overruled the investigation.
I know that, Hutchie. It's either black or it's white. What is it in your eyes?
Or you'd have asked for more information. I don't understand how that investigation cleared him of wrongdoing. Like, can you...
I don't either.
That's the missing piece for me. How can you explain that to me? Like, it's almost like... By saying that they're cleared of wrongdoing, they're suggesting that there was more to it that hasn't become public.
Yeah, there's an element of that. Yeah. Or you're left to think that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so you'd be wanting more, and you'd certainly want to be hands-on as the CEO about it, wouldn't you, at the time?
I would have thought so. So you then got the new chairman, Richard Freudenstein, who then got on the media rounds the day after it happened on the weekend. The person who broke the story, Stephen Jewell from the Herald Sun. So that was Friday afternoon. It played out, and then Saturday he's made comments. Now, a couple of them, Hutchie, this is a quote. I am staying based on the facts as they are today. The Board of Cricket Australia would not have made that decision. I acknowledge the decision clearly sent the wrong message that this behaviour is acceptable and without serious consequences. Now, that's his quote on the weekend. This guy's been on the board since 2019, and he admitted in the same interview that he was informed of the pain situation, as he referred to it, the pain situation. So he's come on 2 years ago himself, was made aware of something. If he wants to refer to it as a situation, well, let's delve a bit deeper if you were now taking over the whole running of this board and get to the bottom of it. So let's assume he knew the situation, and yet he's only been strong enough to make these comments on the day after a story has broken publicly where everyone's in on it. He wasn't strong enough to make that decision prior to that moment. What's that say about him?
Yeah, their strength of leadership was either not there at the time, or they had a slightly different version of events. Don't you think?
Well, they're also panicking, Hutchie. They've just dealt with Sandpapergate. They've got a guy who had basically all but retired from first class cricket and was not even going to be considered for a selection in his state team. They've got him into the Australian team, and they've made him captain. So they're presenting him as the future, the Mr. Nice, squeaky clean guy. So they didn't want to deal with another scandal.
If he was just a player at the time and not the captain.
Which he was at the time of the text.
He was a player and not the captain at the time.
At the time of the
highly inappropriate, you know, indefensible text. If he was just a player in the Australian cricket team when the investigation happened, what would have happened?
I think he gets rotated out of the team for the second or third test, and you never see or hear
him
again.
Probably, yeah. Yep. So are you held to higher account? Should you be held to higher account as the Australian captain?
Or should you
be held to the society expectations?
You are. And we've debated that a thousand times, that type of question on this show since duration. So you are. So that's all established as fact. You are held for a higher account. I just feel the people around the situation, Hutchie, have let themselves down as much as Tim Payne.
It's a very complicated
situation. Of course it is. But let's go back. You can't not go back to the moment in time when they're made aware of this. It's so the sandpaper gate is so fresh in their thinking. That has clouded their view on this.
Well, I think it's inconsistent with what they said they were going to be as a place of respect.
Yep.
From that point on, if they put their name to that, then they probably were inconsistent to it, unless they had a different version of events.
Well, that's the other side of it. But
Which is hard to even comprehend from the outside because...
But it mustn't be two different, Hutchie, because they've now made these strong statements this weekend just gone, saying that they would have acted very differently. So I don't know whether the other side of the story is going to be that different to what we think it is.
I heard Jared Waitley summarise yesterday by saying...
No, I want your view. I don't want Jared's, Hutchie.
Disappointed in him and for him. And that was kind of...
But I want your view. Are you disappointed in him and for him? Because you employ him as well, Hutchie, Tim Payne.
Yeah, I thought Jared captured it pretty well. I'm disappointed.
No, I don't want Jared's view. I want your view.
Oh, Damo.
No.
Honestly,
give me
a headache.
I want your view, Hutchie. I'm talking to you. I'm not talking to Jared.
I thought that what Jared said captured how I was feeling pretty well, disappointed in him and for him.
So he does have an arrangement with SEN. Does that cease to exist now?
Well, it finished about 3 or 4 weeks ago. He did a 6 or 8 week run of Jack and Tim for breakfast in SEN Hobart, which finished around grand final time. We're always going to have the summer off. He's doing some phone calls in here now and then to stay active, and we're going to sit down post Ashes. So that won't change in my mind. Like, we'll sit down.
So you will continue to employ Tim Payne?
Damo, no, you're not listening. We had a 6 to 8 week run of Jack and Tim for breakfast, which finished on grand final eve. We always had a break over the summer for 4 or 5 months, and we're going to pick up the conversation post Ashes around January and February, and I would think that remains.
And when you pick up the conversation, will you seek to re-employ?
I don't know. We'll just work through things as...
Has it changed your view on having someone who's been through this publicly in the last 48, 72 hours on your platform?
I haven't even sat down...
Oh, you would have thought about it, Hutchie.
...with Tim and his agent, worked out what he wants to do, what happened.
If he was... Okay, if the deal hadn't expired in terms of his role in the deal, and if he was to appear on SEN next Saturday or next Friday, whenever the show was running, would you have allowed him to run?
There's no point answering hypothetical questions.
No, there is. There is.
No point.
There is. We talk hypothetically the whole time. This whole show is based on hypothesis, Hutchie. So what would you have done if the contract hadn't...
I don't even want to get drawn in the hypothetical. We'll sit down at the end of the summer, as we're always going to do.
What would Jared Waitley have said about that if I asked him that?
I don't know, Damo. It's fairly raw. There's a lot of things. I think he's made a mistake. I think he's fundamentally at heart a good person. And I think there's so much I don't know or understand that I wouldn't mind understanding better before we worried about anything else. And how does he feel in it all?
Yep. The interview with the Herald Sun or the News Limited publications with Hamish McLachlan, that was done in world record time for such an event. So Friday afternoon, the story breaks publicly. By Sunday morning, which means interviews done Saturday, both Tim Payne and wife Bonnie have sat down at great length and great context to the story with Hamish McLachlan in a double page spread in the Herald Sun. And I made sure I read every word of it. I don't think they could have been more open and honest and transparent in their answers. What did you make of that in that particular time frame and how that was done?
Well, it's sad to read, isn't it?
Very sad. I was sad.
And you can't but not feel for the two women involved here, the subject who's nameless, and Bonnie, Tim's wife, because both would be going through on different levels, enormous hurt and pain.
Yep.
And your thoughts go to both of those. Unfair victims in both of this in the situation. I thought it looked like they had been preparing for the day for a while. So I read that this had been going around in media circles. I hadn't heard, never. First I heard of it was when our producer emailed me saying this is online on the heraldsun.com.au. Hand on heart, had not heard
the
whisper of it. And so I know we had a couple of tweets saying, did you guys know about it? I had zero idea.
No,
could have said to me, pick 100 Australian figures that are in the middle of this. Oh, such as
he
his
could have said 500
such as
to me.
His nature and character, you wouldn't have had him in the conversation for it to be about him. So I was shocked at that. It looked like they had been preparing for the day for several years and reverted to the existing plan for a couple of reasons. I don't know that to be true. One, it was pulled together quickly, that sit down. And two, it's very rare, I think, just talking about the journalistic side of things for a minute, which seems inconsequential, it's very rare for the paper that brings you down to get the sit-down exclusive.
Does he have a deal? I think he has a deal with them, doesn't he?
Well, I don't know. Like Hamish was the right person because his long-form interviews are always fair. He's very good at it and people trust him. And
I think he's sympathetic and empathetic too, which makes for a good interview.
Yeah. So he was,
and he asked all the he doesn't need me to say this about what he does, but he clearly asked every single question.
He asked the questions
that
had to be asked.
He asked the awkward ones, you know.
And it was handled, you know, pretty well in an awful situation.
Yeah.
So I thought
they both
courageous to do it.
In that side of it, presented incredibly well, given the rawness of it being public. And again, the rawness wasn't there from them dealing with it, but from the public element of it, it was.
It felt to me like this might be unfair, that it crossed their mind that if this ever comes public, what will we do? Well, we'll go and do a sit down with Hamish and we'll tell the story.
As far as a media strategy goes, it was absolutely on the front foot, wasn't it? It was like, to use the cricket
analogy, I don't think they really had any choice.
And well, they could have not done anything.
Yeah, and it would be awfully hard for them both because they dealt with it with each other. Bear in mind, this is a matter between the two of them.
Correct. Yep. And it was, great to see what...
So, I've been struggling with it a little bit, like everybody, just trying to understand the facts.
Yep.
Because as they're tabled, they're indefensible. So...
Mm. Yep. Hutchie, let's head to the question of the week.
On the sounding board, it's our question of the week for Drinkwise. If you're choosing to drink, choose to Drinkwise.
We got dozens of questions relating to the Tim Payne situation. We'll continue the Tim Payne topic through the question of the week for Drinkwise via Steve James, who posted this to us via Facebook. Reading the interview with the Paynes, if journalists have tried in years gone by to get the story out, what would have changed this time around? Has the journalist got someone to crack it, or has it been leaked on purpose by someone? It's an interesting question, Steve, behind the scenes as to how it goes on. Like Hutchie just mentioned only a few moments ago, I was unaware of the talk around this situation until Tim Payne himself mentioned, I think, in the Hamish McLachlan interview, that it wasn't the first time a media outlet had approached him or his camp, so to speak, about this particular issue. Your question, has a journalist got someone to crack, or has it been leaked on purpose by someone? I wouldn't claim to know how Stephen Drill ended up getting the information and then going with it. And there's two sides to that. You can have the information as much as you like. You've then still got to have, again, let's just remove the Tim Payne story, the courage to hit send on a story that's got massive ramifications, not just for the subject, but the people who present the story. So there's all of that in all of this. Hutchie and I had a discussion a few moments ago about beat writers. I'm not saying a beat writer wouldn't have written it, but maybe you wouldn't tackle it as hard. Again, I don't know any of that.
No, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I don't think this story ever comes from those that travel on the road with the team. Do you?
But that's also making judgments on some of their journalistic pursuits. And there is the cricket writers are as good as anyone.
It's just not what they set out to do. And you've often admitted that's not your cup of tea.
Well, there's an element of you can hear stuff. And again, my view, Hutchie, if once you hear something, you have to check it out. And the day you don't check it out is the day you should get out of the caper. And I'm massive on that. So provided it's come from a good source, you'll check it out. And then you've got the other decision to make. Can you stand it up? And then you've always got the fallback position. Well, hang on, do I actually go with this? And until you get all the information anyway, you don't have to get to that last point anyway.
Yeah, make the decision after you
get the facts. And we've discussed before, sometimes, again, remove Tim Payne from this, but sometimes you can get to that point and go, it's just not worth it anyway. It's just, I can back it up, but where does it go? It destroys three people's lives, and what's it mean anyway? So, look, again, I'm not saying I would have done that process, that exact process for this one, Steve, but... That's how it would have got out. So probably the fact that it was a non-beat writer is probably the key part to this being made public.
Now, tell me, before we finish up for the day on series whatever, episode whatever, how was Arden Street on Friday morning?
No, I didn't go.
No, Friday morning just gone. How was it?
It was pretty good, wasn't it?
No. How was it to be down there among all the significant historical...
Oh, I was invited to go down. I had something on, Hutchie. So. I did, actually.
Hang on a minute. So North Melbourne has gathered its entire history, everyone from Peter DeRouse to Scanlon's to JB. We saw Brad Scott go back. We saw the beautiful scenes of Danny Laidley and how well she handled things. It had all the history of North, and you did turn up. You had something on.
I did, and I don't need to go into detail as to what that was, but it was a family-related.
You wonder why you're ostracised by that footy club.
I'm not ostracised. They invited me down, Hutchie.
And you couldn't bring it to celebrate this milestone day of being debt-free, and you couldn't turn up. You couldn't attend to be part of the... That disappoints me. And I'm sure it disappoints all of the Sounding Board family. Where were you? Are you on 22 weeks leave? Of course. That makes sense.
So Jane, is that the little note you just gave Hutchie? 22 weeks. I'm now a week and a half into my 10 weeks, Hutchie, unlike the more than 10 weeks that you pay your employees.
22 weeks.
I get 10 weeks. I'm in a week and a half in. And I had something on with my mother.
Something
on. I actually did, all right? So I don't need to go into it.
Couldn't have taken your mum? Like, this was a monumental day. The club being debt free.
Oh yeah, and they needed me to be there.
It was a day of celebration of the kangaroo history being debt free, Damo.
It was big.
Big. At the start of 2012, the debt was $9 million, and you were stopping them going to the Gold Coast.
Hutchie, I helped save them.
That's the quote we're looking for. That's the grab. Just time code that for me. 47 minutes in and 20 seconds, Jane, into series whatever.
We've done about 15 episodes of that topic.
Were you thanked in the speech?
I really hope not,
actually. Shouldn't there have been like a panel of washed-up journalists who could get up and talk about the old days as well?
Like we do every week on this show.
Who else would have been on that panel with you?
Poltz.
Jeff Ponner.
I'm seeing Poltz tonight, actually.
They got the reunion dinner.
Yes.
Timsy?
Timsy will be there.
Yep. Got McFarlane?
I think so, yeah. He's a 50-50 operator, Glenn. He sometimes turns up, sometimes doesn't.
Tony DeBolfo?
Yep. The Beast.
Ron Reid?
No, not Ron. No, he's not part of that crew. He's got his own crew.
Special cheer out to Ron if you're listening and just realised you haven't been invited to the old writer's dinner. Ron, still time next time. Who else didn't you invite?
No, it's not all about me. It's actually Timsy. If anyone didn't get invited, it's on Timsy's head, right?
Here we go. Mention the stories on that. Where is it? The Phoenix?
No.
Why haven't I been invited?
No, it's a specific little...
Michael Horan there?
It's a specific little group within the Herald Sun.
Trent Bouts.
He was the beat writer before I was. Yep. Hutchie, that was...
Peter DeZira?
He would be there, except he's not, I believe, in Australia anymore.
Isn't
he? I don't think so, no. He has
wonderful been football reporter he was.
1519. The sounding board for DrinkWise, that was episode 43, series 6. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to DrinkWise.
Thanks for listening to the Sounding Board podcast with Hutchie and Damo. Tune in for questions tomorrow, and to send a question to the boys, email thesoundingboard@sen.com.au, follow the show on Twitter @soundingboardep, and like the Facebook page. It's all thanks to DrinkWise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to DrinkWise.